You're listening to KDNK's Public Affairs program for Land's Sake. Today, our guest is Sarah Johnson, founder of Wild Rose Education. Welcome.
Thank you, Bill. It's great to be here.
And so I want to talk a little bit about your background, and then we'll talk about your Wild Rose Education. Okay, does that sound
good?
Sounds
great.
Okay. So basically, where did you grow up? And tell us about what that was all about.
I grew up in southwest Missouri, right on the edge of the prairie and the Ozarks, in a little tiny place called Dade County, Missouri. It's not that small. It's just that there's not a lot of people there. And a lot of my growing up was out in the country on a farm right next to Stockton Lake, or really close. And it's very rural, extremely rural, like in a county without a stoplight or a fast food restaurant, like 55 miles to the closest Walmart and movie theater and stoplight and all of those things. And so I always thought the city would be the better place to be because the grass is always greener on the other side, especially when you're a kid.
It is.
But that's where I grew up.
Well, you did quite a few things when you were quite young that sort of tied you to the land. Tell us about that. You had a vegetable garden, you had woods to explore, and you planted some trees, I guess, didn't you?
Yeah, my folks are, I could say I didn't fall very far from the tree, and my folks are very connected to land and committed to growing food and planting things and growing things and making as many. Yeah, my dad really wanted to be able to grow things, and that included not just vegetables, but trees. And so I remember as a little kid, we would go on these acorn or peppermint walks. I think the peppermints are what got me to stay walking. But we would literally collect white oak and other oak acorns, and we would go plant them down the road on the next to the fence line as a little kid. And today, those oak trees are probably 30 or 40, probably 40 plus feet high. And that was a special moment with my dad as well that I remember. And then as I got a little older and could carry things bigger than acorns, I remember planting lots of saplings. We would get like white pine saplings that were maybe 18 inches long or tall. And we'd put them in 5-gallon buckets and we'd go plant them in very specific places, but wandering through the field and planting those with a shovel. And my dad and my brother primarily, because my sister was too little at the time. And those white pine forests, as my niece likes to call them, the pine forests. She's now like 10 years old. But in a place where those trees don't typically grow naturally on their own, to have those pine forests today on the kind of on the edges of my parents' property is really special.
Absolutely. Well, you also started science projects when you were quite young as a teenager and learned the importance of collecting data as a citizen scientist. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, when you have two parents who are both high school science teachers, you can't really avoid being part of their projects.
Right.
And thankfully, their projects are pretty fun. My dad was known for all of his amazing field trips and my mom as well. And so the citizen science, they were really involved with the Missouri Stream Team, which is very similar to Colorado River Watch. And so when I was probably in seventh grade, I started to learn more about what that meant. And so we would go down to local creeks and streams and collect data periodically throughout the year. And that data went to the state and beyond for baseline data. As well as, I remember at one point we took the canoe out on the lake and we had a Secchi disc and we were doing some kind of one-off water quality testing at different regions of the lake. And so, yeah, we were always, I mean, mom and dad were always signing up for something and volunteering and then brought us kids into it as with them.
So what happened when you went to the University of Missouri State University? What did you do there?
Well, so I went to college at Missouri State in Springfield, Missouri, and I was initially my first year of that in the university. I actually was in the marching band, which that was pretty amazing, and got to play at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Those of people in Carbondale might remember that I'm the founder of the Carbondale Renegade Marching Band. Maybe there's a connection.
Okay.
But I quickly realized that I didn't want to be on the football field every weekend in the fall, especially. And so with the band. And so I knew I wanted to take science classes because that's my background and interests. But I quickly realized that there were a lot of science classes that had really great field trips in the biology and geology departments. And so following in my parents' footsteps, who did similarly, that's how I chose a lot of my courses. And we were really lucky to have a geology department that did all these like spring break big white van field trips out here to Colorado and Utah and New Mexico to look at geology of the West. And then also the biology department had some really cool deserts of the Southwest field trips, like over Christmas break, and as well as weekend field trips. And then I pragmatically also had to take things like calculus and cell biology so I could actually graduate and not just take more field trip classes.
Unfortunately, you have to take those science classes, don't you?
Yeah.
But you were introduced to wilderness as a Girl Scout, is that correct?
Probably, yes, and probably with my parents before that. But when I was in fourth grade, my mom was our Girl Scout troop leader and continued to be all throughout the whole experience. And we started going on these weekend backpacking trips in the Ozarks. And there's capital W Wilderness in Southwest Missouri and in Northern Arkansas. And those places like Hercules Glades and Piney Creek and the Buffalo National River, which is part of the National Parks, managed by the National Park Service, those places really shaped me as an outdoor lover, as a wilderness lover, as a person who understood federal public lands. And our Girl Scout troop existed through high school primarily because we went backpacking in the spring and the fall every season that we possibly could. And I also got to do some really neat backpacking trip, or a really great backpacking trip up at Isle Royale National Park through the Girl Scouts.
Oh, wow. That sounded like a lot of fun.
And then we also came out and came to the Rewa Wilderness, which is up near Rocky Mountain National Park, as a group when we were in high school. And just, so it was both my family, but it was Girl Scouts. And then it led into being in the college at the university, the outdoor program there, where I ended up actually working for the outdoor program as my work-study job. And the coordinator of that program was a NOLS, or the National Outdoor Leadership School,
right,
instructor. And Tiana taught all of us, you know, us amateur students, but we ended up basically with a NOLS education without going to a NOLS course.
Well, it's pretty good, yeah, because I was with Outward Bound, and that was our competitor. NOLS was our competitor.
Totally.
But when you you had an internship, and I'd worked before when I was with the Bureau of Land Management with Student Conservation Association, or SCA as we call it. So where did you do that internship? Was it here in Colorado?
Yeah, so I was lucky to get an internship at the Black Canyon of the Gunnison National Park in 2004 in the winter. So I came out in January without snow tires, without knowing anything about skiing and all the rest, and came and lived on the south rim of the Black Canyon of the Gunnison National Park with only one other staff person that was living there in the winter. And I was welcomed into this western Colorado community of the Montrose, Ouray, Gunnison Circle, and even the North Fork Valley a bit, and fell in love with western Colorado in a very quiet season of winter with a lot of solitude.
Well, you like winter. You told me you've been cross-country skiing since the holidays. So
I love it.
So you got a taste of it then and didn't run away.
That's right.
So you went also to the Grand Canyon. Tell us about that a little bit, Northern Arizona University.
So my last semester of undergrad, I was selected to be part of the Grand Canyon semester, which is a program that has kind of fluctuated between, and there's been different variations of it, between Northern Arizona University and Prescott College. And I did the NAU version of it, and it was incredible. I didn't ever do like a study abroad. This was the closest to a study abroad or study away program I ever was part of. And I think I remember that we were out in the field camping more than 55 days in the semester.
Oh, wow.
And it was a landscape study. It was a program that was super interdisciplinary. It was a program that we took all these different courses, everything from park management to archaeology to geology course and outdoor skills and all these other things. But mostly the program taught me how to learn a place, because it was focused on northern Arizona, not just the Grand Canyon. And how to learn a place. How do you ask? What kind of questions do you ask? And how do you really learn a landscape and its community? And I always like to say, like, a place, like from the rocks to the politics and everything that makes a place operate, and the complexity and the beauty and the tension all combined. And I also made some really made a couple of really good friends, and one of those people I'm still extremely close with. And so it's not just, it's both and, right? It's the experience and the people. And then, of course, being in the canyon in all the different ways you can explore the canyon.
And then you put all that to work, all that experience to work, when you went to ACES, Aspen Center for Environmental Studies, as a naturalist and educator. So we're getting up to the point of starting Wild Rose here.
Yes.
So tell us about that.
Well, I wanted to work in Western Colorado after falling in love with this landscape, with the Park Service, and there wasn't really a spot for me at that time to go back to the Park Service in this place. So I found this place called the Aspen Center for Environmental Studies, or ACES, and they hired me to be a naturalist and educator all kind of at the same time, and worked with many people who are still in this valley. And it was another opportunity to learn another place and learn another landscape, this time the Continental Divide and the Upper Colorado River Basin and the Roaring Fork Watershed, and not just the ecology of the place, but this whole unique community that's so rich with so many different colorful pieces and parts and history and again, tensions and so forth.
Geographers like to call it reading the landscape, and that means what you're talking about, being able to identify with a place and feel a part of it. And feeling a part of it is probably the investment you put into getting to know it and feeling like you belong. So then a little bit later from that, you became a naturalist for a couple weeks for the Park Service. Is that correct?
So I think...
As interpreter, park interpreter?
So I have been a park interpreter at multiple parks in multiple places. But when I landed at ACES, that was kind of almost the end of my Park Service experience, my working in national parks. I also worked with some park partners like the North Cascades Institute. And then, so I did that and taught a bunch of fifth graders in the North Cascades one fall. And then I basically had a choice. I was fortunate to be offered two different jobs, one in Yosemite and one here. And both were incredible options. Both are incredible landscapes and like places of adventure. But I distinctly remember making the decision based on, I'm tired of starting fresh with every job. I want to go a place where I already have community. And I already know some really wonderful people. And I know the trails and the river and the towns and all the rest. So I came and worked at the Roaring Fork Conservancy and ended up working there for about 8 years. And that was a wonderful experience to continue to dive in and be part of so many things.
So now we're coming to Wild Rose Education. When did you found that? And tell us a little bit about it. People can check your website out at wildroseeducation.com. But tell us about how you started that and what that's about.
Yeah, so in 2015, I went out on my own, not knowing what was going to happen exactly. I no longer had a salaried job, and I did not have a business plan, nor a marketing plan, nor any of those parts and pieces. But I just trusted that it was the right decision to make in that moment. I was halfway through graduate school in a hybrid program at Hamline University. And I know and trust and believe that the reason I have been successful for almost 10 years is because of the investment in community and people and relationships, not only here locally, but across the state. And then today, I would say definitely across the country and sometimes across North America, because I've worked on projects in Canada. I've worked on projects way north in Alaska. And sometimes I volunteer. It's not my work, but I volunteer around the world. So but that's all successful because of investment in community and relationship.
You're listening to for Land's Sake. And I'm Bill Kite, your host. Today our guest is Sarah Johnson, who's the starter and the primary person at Wild Rose Education. And she's telling us a little bit about that. So you said something I really liked to me. You said, we go beyond what has been and facilitate becoming what can be. Oh, I really like that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so I've been watching the world. I've been a participant, and then I've been a colleague, and I've been watching the world facilitate learning in so many different ways, both in classrooms and in parks and in, you know, on watershed tours and all the rest. And I'm super interested in how people learn and how if the collective, the academy, the research can tell us that the neuroscience of how people learn, then by golly, why not actually facilitate and teach in a different way that actually integrates all of that, what we know about teaching and learning. And so I think this participant-centered approach that's really focused on the learner, the participant, it's apparently more unique than I realize. But I think it's incredibly effective. And the feedback that I get from whether I'm facilitating a group of adults in a teacher workshop or in a classroom in a school, doesn't matter how old you are, the feedback is so incredibly powerful and different than what it used to be before I really took this on, this really participant-centered, culturally responsive teaching strategy. But it's going beyond. It's like the world's a possibility. It's like, well, I don't know. Let's see if we can figure that out. And let's give it a try.
So it's experiential education then. Is that?
I would say it's experiential, but not necessarily in the outdoor perspective. Like a lot of times I'll think of experiential education, I'll think of outward bound or knolls or these types of things. But I would say it's experiential in whatever context it's in. It's still very experiential. Yeah.
And you've been collaborating with some people across the nation. That's sort of been your staple for Wild Rose Education.
Yes.
So what's that about?
So the projects that keep me going are all over the place. Some of them are right here in Colorado, and my office is right here at the Third Street Center. But the projects I'm part of, I'm an adjunct faculty over at Western Colorado University in Gunnison. I also work on projects with organizations like the River Management Society, and help them help their public lands people, public lands river managers have better trainings. I help them. I also work on some really large projects in the Arctic Ocean that has been very opportunistic in the last few years, and as well as with some Alaska Village schools in the Chugach School District up near like Valdez, Alaska. It's always quite the smorgasbord of projects at any one time in my quiver, in my portfolio at the moment. And it's keeps it quite interesting. And it also keeps me on my toes. And sometimes it's a lot to be part of so many different teams, because all of those things, I'm on different team projects primarily. And so it's all these different teams and all these different contexts. And that's an adventure and also an incredible gift of collaboration and learning and making impact. And then I guess the big project that's coming up that's new and different. Over the years, I used to run a river summit for high school kids. It was called the Healthy Rivers Youth Water Summit. And that kind of came to a close in 2020. And now there's been an opportunity to work with an organization called LIRA, based in Denver, to create a Colorado Youth Climate Summit. And that is a really big deal, to be able to bring high school youth together here in Carbondale in May to really learn about what are true climate solutions in this context of rural Colorado, and more so how do you actually take action? And so hopefully it'll be a very inspirational and energizing and fun relational experience for high school youth.
All right. That sounds really interesting to me anyway. If there are any young people listening, well,
or
be sure to put
anybody
that on your calendar.
Knows any high school youth,
because
high school, they need a lot of encouragement and mentorship to be encouraged to apply, because they all have to apply individually And we need everybody to apply by March 1st. So any adult that knows any high school kid, please take the lead and help them find the Colorado Youth Climate Summit. Just Google it.
There you go. In 2015, you changed your corporation over to Colorado Public Benefit Corporation. Why did you do that?
Yeah, so just a little bit of clarity. I started, actually, I just did that.
You just did that.
This year. But so I, Wild Rose Education has always been a sole proprietor, small business, and a little LLC, and just a lever, a vehicle to allow me to get paid and work on some really cool projects. And it was brought to my attention that there was a possibility, this was just a few months ago, that I could formally transition my business in the state of Colorado to what's called a public benefit corporation. And so everybody's like, well, why would you do that? What does that mean? And it's, to be clear, it's not a B Corp. That's like, B Corp is kind of like LEED certification, whereas a public benefit corporation is just a designation by the state. Secretary's office. And so I'm hope basically it's an opportunity for me to publicly tell the world, if anyone wants to know, that as a business, I'm committed to making the world a better place, truly offering public benefit work as opposed to selling widgets and just making a lot of money. And so I think it sets Wild Rose Education apart when it comes to different clients perhaps choosing to work with different, you know, when they choose to work with me. It's like a 10-year thing. It's been almost 10 years of this being independent business, and why not take advantage of this opportunity to get a little bit of recognition here in the state of Colorado? And and I've also added a couple subcontractor colleagues, friends to my work also in the last few months, because some of the projects we're chasing after right now are quite large. And so all of that just feels really, really positive.
Well, I think it makes sense to me because you're good at connecting people to people, people to place, and people to projects and getting them active. I think activism is something that is important if we're going to make any changes in the world. So landscape has always been a word that I like, the word landscape. And learning the landscape or reading the landscape, as we mentioned earlier, is important, but how do you do that? How do you teach someone to learn the landscape and to read it?
I think it starts with remembering how to be curious. I think in our current society, we pretty much unteach people most people lose their sense of curiosity by about fourth grade if they're being schooled in a typical classroom situation where it's all about having right answers. And so we have to remember how to be curious. And it's something you can be taught to do again and to be full of wonder. And it's there's all kinds of really cool exercises and activities and all these different practices that we can teach to any age of human being of how to pay attention. And I love the Mary Oliver poem about, and I don't have it memorized, but basically pay attention, be astonished, and tell the world about it. And that's the process of science.
Right.
Pay attention, notice what you see, maybe even measure it, draw it, you know, collect the data, tell people about it because it's incredibly cool. So it's this being curious. It's a lot of paying attention and not being bashful about being astonished by it and being like,
right.
Yeah,
exactly.
This actually is really cool. Like last night when I was cross country skiing in the moonlight by myself, and it's that special. It really is. And it's like diamonds on the snow and it's amazing. And so not being afraid to talk about it. But yeah, there's a lot of practices that I have used and continue to use with people of all ages. And to remember what kinds of questions to ask. So teaching people to how to ask questions and how to have discussions and how to ask more questions and be genuinely curious in a container that's being curious and asking questions doesn't mean that you're like less than or not smart enough. It's actually a statement of actually your intellect of being curious and actually quite smart. So.
Well, your focus is on really climate change education. how does that work into what you're talking about of being teaching people to be authentic with their curiosity? In the next few minutes we have left, could you tell us about that? What are you teaching in climate change to kids?
Well, primarily I'm teaching adults to teach kids or communities. I'd say community members because it's much broader.
Okay.
I think it's looking at climate change from a really interdisciplinary, broad lens, everything from looking at the science to looking at the equity and justice issues, looking at the adaptation and mitigation. What do we do about it? How do we adjust our lives? And where is there some hope? And where is there some, like, what's the urgency as well? And this kind of teaching this climate literacy for community members, for people, there's a direct connection, I think, between learning the landscape and being a climate literate person, is that if you are paying attention to your community and really engaged with just your neighborhood, you can start to hear and listen and understand where there are opportunities for making the world better, as well as where there's some really big challenges, and maybe they're the same and maybe they're not. I was just reading a book yesterday called All We Can, it's actually Elizabeth Iona Johnson's book, brand new book called What If We Get It Right? And she was interviewing someone and she said that this person's response was the best way to solve climate change or to be resilient is to like bake muffins and take them to your neighbors. Get to know, be part of where you live. And so that's all connected. Being part of where you live and having a passion for where you live, you're probably more likely to participate and contribute.
For sure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you, Bill.
You're welcome. You're listening to For Land's Sake. Next time on the second Monday of the month, February 10th, our guest will be Eagle County Commissioner Kathy Chandler-Henry.